Before we start, I'd like to acknowledge the 215 First Nations children found in unmarked graves near a former residential school in Kamloops, BC. I feel for our First Nations, and my thoughts go out to those who have been lost and their survivors, who are still dealing with the raw emotions of what happened in these schools. Let's take a moment of silence for these lives and the many who still remain lost. In today's episode of U-Talk, we have interviews with several different people, talking about STEM, helping people with employment opportunities here in Winnipeg, and how we can live a greener life. Shweta Rajan is one of the founders with Immigrant and International Women in Science Network, which is a non-for-profit group born out of a similar but independent ideas from women who saw the need to provide support and mentorship to fellow immigrant and international women in the STEM fields. How have things been going? I know there was workshops and talks that the organization, maybe we should, Immigrant and International Women in Science kind of were hosting.
Yes, you know, as with so many other organizations, we had to rethink how we were structured and how we were going to move forward. You know, before the pandemic, Immigrant and International Women in Science was, you know, we had about 8 chapters across Canada. And one of the things that we did so well was hold in-person meetings across all our chapters. And so, of course, in the middle of a pandemic, we had to shift all of that and rethink about how we can translate that into a virtual setting. So we have moved now from in-person meetings to virtual meetings. During the pandemic, we did a really quick pivot and then, you know, took on Zoom as, you know, the whole world has discovered Zoom now. And one of the ways that we still maintain that really wonderful space that we created for personal sharing is that at the end of most sessions now, we have breakout rooms where people can still connect with some of their local chapters and city leaders and form the niche networks that we are all looking to form. So we have been quite busy with our presentations. We've had a full roster. We haven't taken a break any of the months. We kept our, you know, meetings and commitments on pace. So yeah, it's been a wonderful thing to see how we as a community were able to respond to this challenging time. And, you know, one of the wonderful things about virtual meetings is that it cuts down on commute times and makes our programs accessible, not just to people who are in particular cities, but, you know, anyone from across the world can now join. So if, you know, listeners or people from Manitoba were interested in joining our meetings, they're more than welcome to. So that's one of the wonderful, wonderful advantages of going virtual. And we've certainly seen people, you know, chime in from all different places as we've grown our, as we've pivoted towards having virtual meetings.
Yeah, having those break off kind of calls and rooms sounds like a great advantage. I know one of the struggles I've heard from numerous people is just like when you have those Zoom calls, sometimes it can get a little chaotic, especially when you're trying to like have those more in-depth conversations afterwards.
Yes. I mean, you know, right from the start, our organization has always looked to create that really safe and brave spaces for people to have conversations, like real meaningful deep conversations that connect. And some of our learnings through this year has been about how valuable our community finds that, and how we invite speakers all the time, and they bring tremendous value to our organization and the topics that we discuss. And the magic really happens in the breakout rooms and in these personal conversations where everyone feels that they are now have a space to contribute to and listen to others. So that's been great to see. And we've definitely seen that more and more of our members are interested in having those conversations and connecting beyond just listening to a speaker and gaining knowledge from their experience and expertise.
The accessibility that online provides is just unmatched. So what are kind of the plans moving forward? Hoping to transition again into those in-person meetings, you know, once this pandemic has all disappeared? Or have there been conversations around, you know, a potential hybrid model to, you know, continue to allow people to attend who might not be able to, you know, take part in that transit?
Again, from an accessibility perspective, as you've mentioned, we are looking to maintain our Zoom meetings because, you know, even in cities like Vancouver or Toronto, if you're holding meeting in one place, the fact is that, you know, many moms or many people, other women cannot attend the meetings because there's such a big commute time and there's childcare issues and things like that. So we're certainly leading towards a hybrid model moving forward so that we can continue with making our programs accessible to people across Canada. That's always been our goal, to have as many people engaged as possible in our programs and provide community and support to whoever needs it. So yeah, we will definitely not move away from in-person meetings, but we are looking to see how we can integrate the accessibility of the online format and the community and the connection of having in-person meetings. So we're looking at creating a bit of a hybrid model moving forward.
You need to adapt in order to, you know, meet the most demand.
Yeah.
As an inclusion officer and, you know, making those safe places in the workforce to, you know, address discrimination and racism and all that. Unfortunately, you know, over the pandemic, we've seen the increase in anti-Asian racism. As an organization, have you been hearing about racism and hate and discrimination against Asians in the workforce right now? Have those been conversations been taking place?
We've certainly invited people. When the racial awakening happened last year in May, end of May, early June, we as an organization made a commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and we've definitely held the space for our community members to come and engage in these conversations. And what we are seeing is that especially in Vancouver, hate crimes against Asian communities have skyrocketed. And so what we're seeing so much is not so much of, you know, within the STEM fields, it's not so much that people are experiencing discrimination related to the pandemic, but there is a rising concern around their own safety and the safety of their family members or elders or the vulnerable people that they might be caregiving for, or who might be a part of their net communities. And so there is a significant emotional tax that comes with being a part of a certain demographic, which is suddenly now being targeted. And what we are seeing is increased amount of stress and concern because of that.
Yeah, the pressure when you're afraid of something that could happen to your loved ones in the community, it's incredibly difficult to focus on your work.
Yes. And that's the thing, right? I am brown and I know for a fact that right after 9/11, it was when I was in the States, there was this sudden awareness of my own skin color that wasn't there just a few days before that. There's no place to hide. You can't hide the way you look or, you know, how you're seen as often is in the case of when it's so visible, like your race, your gender, your physical disabilities are some of the things that are very obvious. There's no place that you can get away from them. And so there is this extra layer of nervousness and stress and tension that comes with it. That does take away from being able to be productive at work or, you know, doing your best work. That is a significant concern and that is happening. And so, so many organizations are working towards creating supportive environments for their people. And those are the companies that, you know, as we go through this pandemic are going to see more people be retained and have more resilient and trusting teams because, it's a very reciprocal engagement. Like when you give, when you trust, when you create a kind of a safe space for your community, your workspace to feel supported, then those communities thrive.
Yeah, and your workers will stay with you and have that loyalty because they know you'll watch your back.
Yeah, and the thing is that our history as human beings on this planet, our biggest advantage is the fact that we thrive in communities, right? Like when you look at us and what differentiates us as a species from all different communities and beings that inhabit this planet with us, it is the fact that we are so awesome at communicating with each other and leaning and supporting and working and collaborating. These are the ones that have distinguished us from other beings and had us just skyrocket as a species in what we've been able to accomplish on this planet. And so when from that, think about this, the pandemic and how all of us are in a sense forced to live in isolation, to live by ourselves, to live in, without communities, without connection, without, just looking at smiles on each other's faces, all these small things that create connection and community are now taken away from us. And we are seeing the deep impact of that. And so what makes workplaces and communities thrive is the fact that we lean on each other. And that's been the biggest thing that I've seen in this pandemic is that when communities are thriving, they have already systems in place where there has been trust and there has been connection and there has been loyalty in a sense built from the get-go, and those communities are thriving right now, even in the middle of this pandemic. It's not that they don't have challenges, it's just that they have the basic foundation that allows them to come through this challenge that we are all in with resilience.
Yeah. So where can people like tune in to listen to these conversations? How do they find out more?
One of the best ways to find us is on Eventbrite. We always advertise there. Following us on Eventbrite is great. We also are on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook. We also have a mailing list. So many different forms to come and connect with us. And search. We have a website to make sure that you have access to all the information. So that is IWSnetwork.ca.
How are conversations evolving around immigrant women and international women in the STEM fields? From our last conversation, it sounded like there was still a lot of work that needed to be done in the workforce for those with education to be recognized for both their education and their accomplishments, and to get a job in their chosen field.
There is still a lot of work to be done. This is a long time, deeply held, entrenched policies and practices that we are looking to shift. So there is still a lot. It's been about a few months since we last chatted. So what has shifted in that is that, you know, so the outcomes haven't seen that much of a shift in the past few months that we've spoken. What has shifted is this growing awareness about some of our policies that we have. You know, certainly we've seen, when we think about one of the places that we've seen a really big shift is in understanding what international students bring to our country, right? Like, suddenly saw that international students now couldn't participate in our universities anymore. And so suddenly there was this like big realization that many universities and educational institutions has to reckon with in understanding like, wow, they are a really big contribution to our education systems, to our communities, and you know, are a major force in making all of this happen. And so there have been shifts around perspectives around the education system and what international students bring to Canada, and especially within the STEM fields, which is always thriving. And the other shift is, of course, within the tech community, within the scientific community, and, you know, engineering communities as well, like an understanding that I would say that the understanding was there before, but really a heightened awareness of this talent pool, and looking to see what are the structures and policies that can be put into place to change things. There is awareness that things need to change. If we need to have better communities, then things need to shift. So that's what has happened over the past, pardon me just a minute, in the past few months since we've had our conversation. You know, a lot of organizations are jumping on board and taking on equity, diversity, and inclusion as some of the core tenets that they want to be a part of, and really looking to see how can we harness this wonderful, wonderful talent pool, which is already here.
Something we've learned over the last year is just there's all these, you know, systemic issues that have been, you know, being really focused on, and, you know, awareness is being brought of them. And yeah, things need to change, and it's going to be a while because there's a lot that needs to be changed.
You know, when I think about equity, diversity, and inclusion, what comes to my mind is the pyramids, you know. I always think of that because people who built that pyramid, I just imagine them, and I feel like we are in the middle phase. You know, there has been an amazing number of people who've already been working for decades, several decades on trying to create social change and social justice. And this is not something that has happened today. This has been going on for ages, right? Like, I was just having a conversation with my partner's mom around how life was for her as a new mom, as a nurse, working part-time, and the amount of vacation that was parental leave that was available, and what is available to us now. And at that time, you could only take 6 months of parental leave, including men and women. And as a nurse, she went back to work after 4 months each time after she gave birth. And that's because she took the 2 months before because she was, for her, it was challenging to fulfill on the duties of what was, on the physically demanding duties that were a part of her responsibilities as a nurse. So, and she had to, that was her life. And now I have, access to 18 months of parental leave that is shared between me and my partner. And that's progress that we've made in the past few decades. So for many people, the work of equity, diversity, inclusion seems like it's a new current thing, but we need to recognize the fact that a lot of people have been working towards this goal for a heck of a lot longer. Many of the things that we take for granted today were not available to people 30 years ago. So this is not new work. And the fact is that however much progress that we make in my lifetime, we will not end this work in my lifetime. I will not be reaching the perfect, I will not be the one who will be, or my generation will not be the generation who will be putting building the top of the pyramid and putting the gemstone or whatever it is on the top. I recognize that that's not achievable in our lifetime. And the pyramid will never be built if we all don't work towards it, right? So it's the work of generations together. Generations have worked towards it before us, and generations will work towards it after us. And the hope is that, and this is the optimist in me, is that as we move forward, every generation creates a world that the next generation inherits, and it is a better world than was left towards them, to them. And that's what I work towards when I am in this field.
Yeah, continuing the work from our predecessors.
Yeah.
Continuing. Yeah, just kind of starting this is the next wave.
Yes.
There was a wave before. We're working on the success that they saw, and now let's keep moving forward for next generations.
Yes. Yes.
Fantastic. So, we've talked a little bit about some of the upcoming panels and talks. What are some other things in the future of international and or immigrant and international women in science?
Well, one of the really exciting projects that I have been we've gotten rollout on is we've established a partnership with wonderful organizations out here and gotten access to some grant funding. And we are looking to launch, it's a very comprehensive program. Stay tuned for what's coming up, because this grant funding is going to allow us to really offer deeper, more comprehensive, more meaningful resources to our community members as a part of IWS Network. And we are very excited about this partnership. So I can't give all the information yet because there's going to be a press release soon. So watch for us and stay tuned. As an organization, we are super excited about it. It'll be a great opportunity for underemployed, unemployed immigrant women who are looking for to step up and contribute to their fullest capacity. There will be an amazing breadth of resources which are going to be available to them. And we are looking forward to offering, doing our part in offering the part of the program.
Finding a job can be a challenge, even more so during a pandemic. When you are constantly looking for a job but can't find anything, it can be incredibly disheartening. That's where opportunities for employment can help. Lissandra Lopez is a facilitator and employment consultant at OFE. She took time out of her busy day to talk about how OFE can help job seekers and employers to create long-term, sustainable matches and grow Winnipeg's labor market.
Well, OFE, or Opportunities for Employment, is an employment services agency that has been around since 1996. We are government funded and we provide free employment services to job seekers in Winnipeg. Now, that includes newcomers, refugees, persons with a disability, mature workers, ex-offenders, employment income assistance recipients, and people who are without any financial support at the moment. So pretty much anyone who's looking for employment and they are between, they're either 18 years old or up, they can access our services. So now our services include assessing, equipping, and connecting our clients. And so what we do is when a client, or we call them participants, when our participant or a job seeker comes to us, we assess their skills just to see where they're at and identify any skill gaps that they may have. Then we proceed to equip them by, in some cases, depending on the need of the participant, we may schedule them for a variety of learning opportunities to address those skill gaps and to set them, you know, to get them ready and improve their overall employability. And once the client is equipped and ready to find employment, then we connect them with employers who are hiring, and we help them expand their network through employer events that we host at OFE and through the partnership that we have developed with employers in the community.
It's really great to have services like this to help everyone, because, you know, it's never good to see people without work. Mm-hmm. People want to work at the end of the day.
Absolutely, yes.
Want to keep themselves busy. What about students? Does OFE offer employment training for them?
Yes, if they're looking for part-time employment and they have availability to work, we can also assist them. Now, for example, with international students, as long as they have a work permit, or I mean, in I know that right now their student permit allows them to work 20 hours off campus. If they have all of their documents, you know, ready, then we can definitely assist them. Especially we see that a lot of students come to us closer to the summer because they're looking for a full-time job during the summer. So we can help them with that, definitely. They just need to make sure that their study permit is valid for more than 6 months so that we're able to work with them. That's the only requirement that that we ask they meet.
Looking over your website, when you bring in these participants, it talks about an action plan. What does that look like?
We call it OFE Job Search Action Plan, and it is a guide to an effective job search. So basically, it helps guide the client or the job seeker step by step in their job search process. As a participant moves through the levels of the action plan has different levels, they will gain new tools and skills by participating in different activities that will help them, their job search be more effective. It is meant also to help them get more interviews and job offers and also get them, you know, get them faster, because we want to reduce the number of days that it takes for a job seeker to find employment. So oftentimes what happens is job seekers tend to just stare at a computer screen, just wondering, how do I get started? But with our action plan, the quicker they progress through the levels, the sooner they will be leaving OFE with a brand new job.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. Just looking at a screen, looking through job applications and applying, like it can be exhausting sometimes.
Yes, definitely. And sometimes, like, yeah, again, you see all the requirements and sometimes you wonder, like, how can I market myself? Is anyone really reading my application? Is this is there a real human being reading my resume? What are the chances that I can, or how can I improve my chances to be selected and be called or invited for an interview? So we address all those questions with the action plan, and we make it easier for the job seeker to be a little bit more independent in their job search. And also they have our support for sure, but we want to equip the client. We don't want to make the client dependable, but independent in their job search so that, you know, in the future, if they want to change careers, they know how to do it and how to really market their skills.
So how does OFE help connect participants with employers and employers with participants? How does that work? What does that process look like?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So we have staff whose main job is to liaise with employers in the community. They're called employer liaisons. So our employer liaisons, what they do is they work closely with employers who are actively hiring. So they try to source those job leads and bring them to OFE. But in addition to that, they also develop relationships with these employers. They learn what the employer is looking for in successful candidates, like what kind of skills they need. And we also offer free recruitment services. So we help pretty much we make it easier for the employer to hire these participants by training the participants based on the needs and the skills that the employer is looking for. So this way, we're able to present a good employer with a very well-prepared job seeker, and that's when the magic happens. So in the past, we've been able to develop very strong relationships with large employers in the city. For example, Canada Goose is one of them, Palliser, and even last year during the pandemic, OFE was able to, you know, OFE was ready and able to respond to the needs of the community by partnering with Shared Health to help them recruit a large number of uncertified healthcare aides because we needed to respond to the high demand for health supports professionals in the community. So that's pretty much how we do it. We approach the employers, we identify what their needs are, and then we proceed to train our participants through a rapid response training format, and then we connect them with those employers.
Yeah, seeing those openings in the job market to help fill them. Yeah, absolutely. Just kind of being very flexible.
Yes, we try to identify where the demand is. So we're going with an in-demand kind of approach. So we identify those sectors where most of the job leads are, and then we try to, again, build those relationships with employers just to help our job seekers get employed faster.
Yeah, so working with find those uncertified healthcare workers to, you know, get into that thing area. What are some other current job trends that OFE is seeing right now in the job market?
Well, right now, out of the 148 active job leads that we have, manufacturing has by far the most demand. Is the higher sector right now, and I think it has a lot to do with the pandemic. Retail is predictably the least. So for example, manufacturing right now, it's 39%. It's at 39% of all the job leads, like 59 of our job positions right now are in the manufacturing sector. Then we have a contact center in second place with 26% of all job leads. Then health services with 20%, and retail services being the least 15%. So we think that the low demand in retail is obviously because of the restrictions and, you know, pandemic related. But in terms of manufacturing, what is happening is consumers are purchasing faster than producers can deliver. So that leads to a growth in their sector, and therefore they need, you know, there is a higher demand for labor. So that's why manufacturing right now, it's pretty much taking number one in most of the jobs that we're getting at OFE.
You mentioned, you know, helping these participants and job seekers or market themselves to stand out. So what are some of the best ways to kind of improve their chances of employment, kind of just making their resume stand out from the rest of the papers on the table?
Well, for that, we have a number of workshops, employment workshops that we offer. We have a workshop that is very, very popular, and it's called Self-Marketing Preparation. So during this workshop, which, by the way, is 1 week long, only half days, we train the participant on how to answer interview questions, how to really address what the employer is trying to, the information that the employer is trying to get whenever they ask specific questions. We also train them on how to tailor their resumes, because sometimes, you know, for example, let me use a newcomer participant as an example. Let's say they come from a country where they need to, they're used to putting their picture on the resume. And so when they come to Canada, if they're not aware of the differences, I have seen resumes with pictures on it. And we know that here, that's not common. We don't do that. That's one of the cases. In other cases, a resume may be 5 or 6 pages long. And so we help the participant tailor that and say, okay, so if you have this vast experience, or you have a very diverse type of skill set, let's just break it down. And instead of having one resume that you're sending for every single job that you're applying, let's just create 2 resumes, like targeted to different sectors or different jobs, depending on what they're looking for. So that's that's one of the things that we do to help our participants increase their chances of getting selected for interviews. And we also train them so that once they get the interview, they are ready. They know what to do. We know job interviews can be, you know, nerve-wracking, like, especially for someone who comes from another country that may not be so used to the Canadian interview style. So we want to get them ready, because if you don't know what to expect, your chances of really selling yourself and presenting yourself well to an employer will be low. But if you know the expectations, if you are prepared, then you know how to meet those expectations. And obviously, your chances will be higher, definitely. So that's one of the ways that we help our clients, especially our newcomers, get ready for employment.
Mm-hmm. And I know we talked about this from the newcomer perspective, but this sort of information can help anyone that is looking for employment, trying to market yourself and kind of tailor your resume, cover letter, and get prepared for those interviews, kind of tailor it to the job that you're going into.
Absolutely, absolutely. As I mentioned before, we not only work with newcomer clients, we work with Canadian citizens, people who have been here in Canada as a permanent resident for many years. And it doesn't matter where you come from. The need to find employment is the same. Sometimes the questions repeat between, you know, from newcomer clients to clients who were born here in Canada. They have similar questions, and sometimes they have similar needs too. So we are here, OFE is there to meet those needs, to address those skill gaps, and to help them feel more comfortable, more encouraged in their job search and ready for employment.
So OFE offers their services to a wide array of people. How many people are we seeing utilize these services yearly?
Well, yearly we're able to help and place over 2,000 people to employment. But since we're pretty much addressing this to a newcomer audience, I want to give you some numbers about newcomers. Like, for example, obviously right now things have changed because of the pandemic, but we currently have 200 newcomers at OFE. In 2020, we had a total of 600 over the year, because there were much fewer landings in Manitoba due to the pandemic. But pre-pandemic, our average annual number was 1,500 newcomers only. So imagine our number is definitely higher because we not only work with newcomers, so we see a lot of people going through our doors on an annual basis. And out of those, our goal is to be able to place and help above 2,000 people to employment, to find employment.
Great to see people utilizing these services to find work. It just shows the desire for people to, you know, be a working member of society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with you 100%.
So how do people access your services?
Right now, because of the restrictions, we're trying to discourage in-person registration, but normally before the pandemic and once the restrictions relax a little bit in the province, we'll go back to our previous format, which was we had continuous intake. Our participants or any interested job seeker didn't have to say, book an appointment. They could just come to OFE. We are open from Monday to Friday from 8 o'clock to 4 p.m. So they could come between those hours and register with us. But right now, because of the restrictions and the pandemic, and we're trying to work in a COVID-safe manner, we encourage anyone who's interested to visit our website at www.ofe.ca. We have a feature called the live chat, so it will just pop up and they will be able to chat with one of our employment services advisors. They can answer the questions through the live chat. And also we have a feature on the website where it says register now. They can click that and answer the questions and complete. Some of them can complete the registration form through our website, but if not, they can book the appointments through the live chat, or they can phone our main number, which is 204-925-3490. They can phone that number and book an appointment so that they can come in and fill out our registration form.
Is there anything else that you would like to add?
For anyone who's looking for employment, basically we have employment workshops to address any need. Like if they need to improve their computer skills, we offer computer literacy programs. We have a program called Canadian Workplace Culture, which is tailored to help the newcomers understand the expectations in Canada, how to find a job in Canada, how to be successful in the workplace, and not only find a job, but retain the job. So we're focused on employment retention mainly. And we also have other short trainings for those participants who need a specific certificate to find employment, like for example, CPR and first aid, NVCM, non-violence conflict management. And those trainings are free of charge. You don't have to pay anything to access our services. We are government funded, as I mentioned at the beginning, and all of these services are free. If they go somewhere else for a CPR and first training, they will have to pay. But if they're using our services and taking advantage of these opportunities that we are able to provide to them, all of this training, all of this preparation will be totally free to them. So I definitely encourage anyone who's hearing this podcast to come to OFE. The benefits are, there are multiple benefits that they can, you know, achieve by using our services.
In our ever-changing world, we continue to see the impact humanity has had on our ecosystems, wildlife, and the planet. But there are things we can do to make a difference and reduce our carbon footprint. I had the opportunity to chat with Jessica Correa, CEO of Random Acts of Green. She shares how easy and fun it can be to live a more environmentally conscious lifestyle, build a green community, and having conversations around environmentalism.
So yeah, my name is Jessica Correa, and I'm the founder and CEO with Random Acts of Green. I was born and raised in Oakville, Ontario, and I moved to Peterborough, Ontario when I was about 18 years old. And I, you know, throughout my life, I've, you know, seen a lot of environmental problems, whether it was as a young girl, I saw, you know, just the amount of energy that my parents and my sisters wasted by not turning off the lights. And that frustrated me from a young age. And then throughout my teenage years, I worked at a fast food restaurant. I saw the amount of waste that was thrown out there. And then as a young adult, I had the opportunity to work at a landfill. I got to then see the amount of waste that was thrown out there too, as well. And all of these collective experiences really frustrated me and kind of empowered me to try to do something about it. And I was constantly faced with the phrases, you know, there's nothing I can do, this doesn't matter, who cares, you know, this is pointless, it's hopeless, we're all doomed, that type of attitude. And that really frustrated me. So after I did my, you know, my degrees, I did one in environmental science and studies at Trent University, and then I did a master's as well. So I did two degrees, and I decided that I would turn my master's degree into what I now call today Random Acts of Green. So Random Acts of Green is a social enterprise, and what we do is we bring together both individuals and organizations in an online collective climate action community that has a vision to basically build a world where everyone feels empowered to take action together. So we like to say big or small, we embrace it all. So it can be as small as doing, I don't know, installing a composter or refusing single-use plastics like plastic bags or a plastic straw, or it could be as big as, you know, having an electric vehicle. And we like to say that all of these actions really do make an impact. And so we want to showcase and connect the dots between those things and to show how they're all interconnected, and that, you know, the one thing that you're doing today and the one thing somebody did 3 months ago, they're all connected to each other. And that through this community thread that we now call Random Acts of Green, it's this movement, it's this social enterprise, it's this group, and it's a big collective of people that really want to do positive things for the planet. Sometimes they don't know where to start, or sometimes they just, you know, they feel judged, or they feel like people make them feel so guilty for not doing enough. And we really don't stand for that. We stand for trying to be positive and kind of being a cheerleader and trying to encourage people to take action together. So in short, that's kind of how Random Acts of Green started. I've now been running Random Acts of Green for 5 years, and you know, we're a small team. So we have about six people right now on the team that kind of work with us and help us fulfill our mission. And the way that we kind of sustain ourselves, like through the business model, is just through memberships mostly, and through sponsorships and through some advertising too as well, on different platforms. So we've been able to keep Random Acts of Green alive and keep the movement and the vision and the mission strong as possible throughout the last several years. And I'm very proud of the work that we've been able to do in the last 5 years, and I'm excited to see where things continue from here.
Well, it sounds so cool, like this effort, like kind of this wanting to make a difference and create a community of like-minded individuals to come together and, you know, be that change that, you know, people said you couldn't be, or it's hopeless.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And you know, I've completely lost count of, you know, the amount of people now that have said, you know, you're the reason I have a rain barrel in my backyard, or you're the reason I've decided to eat more plant-based meals during the week, or, you know, you're the reason I now have a composter in my backyard or air dry my clothing. Whatever the Green Act is, it's great to hear that so many people have made changes in their lives and they've inspired others around them. I think that's really where change happens. Like, you know, we're not going to change, you know, all these big environmental problems just as one person. And so we need to act as a group, we need to act as a community, and we need people to not only do their own thing in their own household, because, you know, sometimes it is discouraging, you know, that we can't, you know, we can't possibly get rid of every single piece of plastic we have in our homes, right? Like, there's some things we just aren't able to do. And so kind of overcoming that and saying, okay, I am one person and I can do as much as I can. And then I can inspire those around me to do more too as well through this, so that helping them start their journey. And then, you know, it's a ripple effect, right? And that's really where things have kind of come for the past several years.
Yeah, kind of taking that opportunity to just, like you said, be a cheerleader to people to kind of change their lifestyles to be more eco-conscious. Sure. So yeah. What is the most effective way in starting that conversation with someone about environmentalism? Because, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, deny human-caused climate change and global warming. Or for our audience of newcomers, some of them have never had that conversation before. How do you start?
Yeah, I mean, good question. I think for us, I think it's more, I think you start conversations by taking an action. So, you know, maybe you install a rain barrel and somebody sees you do that and they say, well, why are you doing that? Or maybe, you know, you're out with a bunch of friends and, you know, okay, it's COVID, so maybe you're not out with a bunch of friends, but pre-pandemic, you're out with a bunch of friends at a barbecue and you're the only person that decided to have a veggie burger. And they might ask, well, why are you a vegetarian, right? I think like those types of sparks in conversation is where things are going to kind of progress. People are going to start asking questions. And I think that's really the easiest entry point to kind of start a conversation, spark a conversation. And I think that that's the point of somebody taking action. You know, why are you picking up litter? Or, you know, why are you volunteering here? Why are you planting this tree? Like, just when people see you doing something, they might ask questions. And I think that's really the easiest place to begin. And it's the safest place to begin. And I think that it puts you in a leadership position to kind of educate people on what you're doing and why you're doing it. So I think that is the best way to start a conversation, is to take action and let people know you're taking action, then allow them to kind of come to you and then kind of describe why you're doing a certain action.
Yeah, you're talking about this action-oriented approach, and you've mentioned a couple of things: starting up a rain barrel, a compost, air drying your clothes. Sure. What are some other ways someone can live their life to become or reduce their environmental or carbon footprint? Because I've seen videos and things of like, oh, this is the average amount of meat someone eats in a year, or like, this is how much plastic you go through. It can be pretty crazy. How can we adjust our lives to reduce that?
Yeah, for sure. So I would recommend people download the Random Acts of Green app. And that has a list of 40 different things that people can do to reduce their emissions. And so each Green Act is quantified by the amount of greenhouse gas emissions that are reduced by each action. So you can actually see which things are going to make an impact and how much impact that they're going to make. So things like reducing your beef consumption, like we've mentioned, reducing meat of any type, it'll actually allow you to say, okay, I'm not eating meat, I've reduced it by this amount, and here's how much carbon I've helped save. What's really cool about the app is it gamifies it. So it allows you to see, you know, the amount of carbon that you've reduced. And then basically the more you've reduced, the more green points that you earn. And so it's kind of a fun way to get involved. If you're a brand new beginner, you have no idea where to start, it kind of speaks to those people because it lets them know that this is a safe place, and that it just helps educate people with different ideas. So that's a really great way to get involved, is download the Random Acts of Green app. You can also follow us on social media. We are, we have like 3,000, I think actually maybe 3,500 plus different Random Acts of Green that people can do at
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we are always kind of promoting, like, we have a huge database of different things that you know, people can do at different times of the year. We're always, you know, posting them on our social channels and writing new content, putting things out there so people are educated. Just this month, we ran a pledge for No Mow May, and basically that inspired people not to mow their lawns for the month of May. And that we had so many people do this, and basically this helps protect our pollinator species, to give bees a chance, you know, on the different dandelions that are out there. They're not weeds. You know, they're great ways to encourage pollinators to get some food and to pollinate. And so increases the biodiversity of your area. And so we encourage so many people to do that this year. And it was a great success. So that's just one of many examples that we like to feature on our platforms. There's countless others, like picking up litter while you walk your dog, right? That's another easy thing to do. And so we like to raise awareness about random things that people can do at any time, whether it's, you know, fixing a piece of ripped clothing, like how is that good for the environment, right? And we kind of raise awareness about that and tell people to, you know, extend products life and shop local, to shop secondhand. All of these great things are things we promote on our platforms. And that's kind of, the greatest way, I think, to do that. And, you know, there's so many things people can do. And I feel like people kind of stop at, like, you know, picking up litter and tree planting or recycling. And that's great. And I applaud those things, and I hope people continue to do them. But there are so many other things that people may not have thought about in their lifestyles that are kind of the low hanging fruit, that are easy to do, that actually do make that impact. And definitely swapping out meat is a big one. But again, people there's barriers to doing that, right? Like some people might have grown up on a meat and potato diet, or, you know, there might be cultural reasons why people do that. So, you know, if you can't completely, you know, cut meat out, we like to promote meatless Mondays. So, you know, not having meat on Mondays, or trying to reduce or phase out rather than, you know, make that drastic change. So being, you know, okay with not being perfect. So we like to promote being imperfect, you know, just trying and learning and unlearning, I think is a really important part of being a part of Random Acts of Green, whether you're a member, a follower, you know, or just hearing about us for the first time. Like, this is a very welcoming place, and we're not here to point fingers. If you, I don't know, forgot your reusable bag someday, we're not going to judge you and say that you're a terrible environmentalist or a terrible person. I think it's just about being inclusive and being open to that dialogue and starting conversations. And that's really, I think, how we've gotten this far with this type of approach, is because we've welcomed people in from all different backgrounds and, you know, all different political stripes. You know, it doesn't matter if you're conservative, liberal, NDP, you know, it really doesn't matter. You know, it's just being open and transparent and inviting people into the conversation. And that's really where I feel we've made the biggest impact, is not just preaching to the choir, people that are already green, right? We want to get the people that might not be green yet. Those are the people we want to kind of invite in, because we can help them for sure.
Yeah. You've talked a bit about, you know, personal responsibilities someone can do to make a difference.
Yeah.
Tune in to 101.5 FM every Tuesday afternoon at 1 to hear more stories from fantastic people across Canada. I'm your host, Ryan Funk, and have yourself a good one.